This is Block by Block, a community news program from WPPM LP 106.5 FM, where we explore issues affecting the Philadelphia area with news reports from members of the community. I'm David Hain Menendez.
And I'm Amy Watara. The Trump administration has made it harder for immigrants to get into the United States and has also taken steps to deport many migrants who are already here. The administration has also threatened so-called sanctuary cities like Philadelphia, where local governments have pledged not to cooperate on federal deportation orders. But Block by Block's Casey Ruka reports that advocates for immigrants in the region are pushing to help ensure that Philadelphia public schools are safe spaces for students from immigrant families.
The Philadelphia School District adopted a Welcoming Schools Resolution in 2021 that seeks to protect public school students from ICE arrests and to create safe and welcoming spaces. But in the years since this resolution was passed, community groups believe the district's promises have fallen short. Recently, local immigrant advocacy group Juntos organized a sanctuary schools lobbying day at City Hall to urge lawmakers to fully implement the Welcoming Schools Resolution, as well as other policies and increased funding to protect immigrant students attending Philly schools.
Today, we are gathered to demand an investment in the immigrant communities that make this city thrive. We are here for the immigrant youth and newcomer students who are too often pushed to the margins.
That's Juntos Executive Director Erica Guadalupe, who says the school district needs to step up during this time of political upheaval and uncertainty for migrants. Juntos and other advocates are calling on officials to do four things. Bring back the Multicultural Assessment Center, hire more bilingual counseling assistants and pay them a livable wage, open three new newcomer programs in existing neighborhood schools, and provide robust, frequent training and support to district employees in case of potential ICE interactions.
Philadelphia says it's a welcoming city, but welcoming means more than words. It means actions. It means showing up with real resources, especially at a time when xenophobic rhetoric is actively taking shape in the form of policies and systems that violate and abduct our community. Sanctuary schools and the Pennsylvania Immigrant Family Unity Project are not just extras. They are necessities. They are about equity, access, and justice.
The school district and the city have recently reiterated their promise of maintaining sanctuary city status. But the lack of transparency and apparent neglect around these promises have frustrated many community members, especially as the school district has quietly cut down on existing resources for immigrant communities. Vivian Chang is executive director of Asian Americans United. She says she's disappointed about the defunding of many of these programs.
Students are being left behind in schools, failed by these systems that are supposed to educate them. Even though parents, students, families, they've all worked together to build immigrant-friendly schools for decades. The district was sued over it. Class action lawsuits led to the creation of the Multicultural Assessment Center and bilingual counseling assistance to support students. But these have been torn down for years.
Students are also speaking up. Luis Ojeda Flores attends the Academy of Palumbo and says they felt frustrated with the school district's lack of action for students in the past few months since immigration matters have escalated.
All students should know that the leaders in their community are doing everything in their power to protect them. I am tired of leaders making me and those around me feel unimportant. We don't feel like our physical, mental, and emotional safety are prioritized.
Joshua Finkelstein also urged the city to take action. He's a local policy coordinator at Make the Road PA.
We've worked directly with families who are terrified to send their kids to school. We've listened to students who feel like they don't belong and parents who are afraid to even ask for help. And yet, the School District of Philadelphia has still not fully implemented the Welcoming Sanctuary Schools Resolution. There's no consistent training for staff. The Rapid Response Plan is still missing. And many students still don't know where to turn when they need help.
One of the things immigrant advocates are asking for is an increase in the amount of newcomer programs, which typically offer multilingual classes and resources to recently arrived migrant youth. Currently, newcomer programs exist in only two schools in the city, despite the demand being much greater. The percent of students at Philadelphia schools who primarily speak a language other than English has been steadily rising over the past decade. In the 2014 academic school year, 9% of students were English learners. By the 2022 school year, that number had risen to 17%. Activist Debbie Way from Asian Americans United was Deputy Chief Academic Officer for the Office of Multilingual Curriculum Programs at the school district back in 2010. Now, almost 15 years later, Debbie has seen many of the programs and initiatives she kickstarted shuttered entirely, including the Multicultural Assessment Center.
I think the reduction is due to part of it is a lack of institutional knowledge, and part of it is just the lack of anyone at the higher levels within the district that have a background serving immigrant and refugee students. And I also think it's due to austerity and constant cutbacks in educational fundings, and sometimes the easiest places to cut are the places where the voices are the least likely to be heard. It's much easier to silence those voices.
Luis Flores, the high school student from Palumbo, says the lack of resources makes it tough for immigrant students to thrive.
Back in my middle school, there was four kids that had come but weren't able to learn English. We had ESL classes, but those classes gave the bare minimum. The teachers that we had were great, but the amount of resources that we had were not good.
Efforts are still ongoing to push the city and school district to fully implement the Welcoming Schools resolution. Until then, community groups like Juntos have been forging the way for what sanctuary schools could look like through centering the voices that have been silenced the most. For Block by Block, this is Casey Ruka.
Block by Block's Crystal Herrera also contributed to that story.
Pennsylvania requires schools to teach students about sexually transmitted diseases, but it's up to the individual school districts to decide whether to offer comprehensive sex education. Block by Block reporter Sheila Lorette Emerson brings us this story about how some local groups are looking to change that and why.
In Pennsylvania state law, schools must stress abstinence as the only foolproof way to prevent the spread of sexually transmitted infections or STIs. They're not required to talk about other forms of prevention, and they're not required to include instruction on a wide variety of topics such as sexual orientation, gender identity, consent, anatomy, puberty, menstruation, or pregnancy. But there are local organizations that are working to fill in that gap by reaching out to young people in creative ways. Earlier this year, I attended the 8th Annual Condom Fashion Show, which gives people a fun way to talk about sexual health. The Condom Fashion Show was the finale to a day-long Black and Brown Health Equity Symposium held at Temple University. I spoke with a few of the designers of some of the condom-inspired fashions. Chris Hill is with a nonprofit group called Young Artist Program. Chris says they thought it was important to participate to spotlight how comprehensive sex education can help prevent unintended pregnancies.
We thought about how people, especially in schools, teach abstinence only, and that's just like an unrealistic thing, especially for young and horny little teenagers. But we need sex education. If we can bring more awareness to it, we want it to. So yeah.
Chris worked with Gabby Rodriguez and Ivy Jackson on their entry. Their design featured a fake pregnant belly covered with neon orange condoms above a tan skirt covered with multicolored messages. The handwritten messages included birth control, STIs, bodily autonomy, healthy relationships, and emergency contraception.
The types of things that you would learn about in a comprehensive sex education course or program.
Young Artist Program co-founder Ivy Jackson says without learning about these things, young people are more likely to get pregnant or contract an STI.
Being aware of those things would be really helpful to a person who is dealing with an unplanned pregnancy, either to avoid it or to know what to do once they are in that situation.
I also spoke with Yanira Martinez. She's a high school student and member of the STAR program, which stands for Students Talking About Relationships. Her entry in the condom fashion show wasn't just about using condoms, but also how young people can set boundaries by protecting their personal space. Yanira's creation was a wide hoop skirt that swept the floor and was covered in six rows of condoms.
I feel like the hoop skirt, it also gives you like a social distance thing, so it prevent people from coming close to me and making me safe.
The condom fashion show was organized by the nonprofit Prevention Meets Fashion, which uses fashion as a way to help provide comprehensive and inclusive sex education to young people and specializes in talking to BIPOC and LGBTQIA+ communities. Odessa Summers is a board member of Prevention Meets Fashion, and she described some of the free giveaways for the symposium's attendees.
So we have condom cases here, and they have condoms in it. And this is good because it keeps your sexual health tools discreet. And if you want to be a little bit more flashy, we have condom necklaces here. We have dental dams for reducing STD transmission through oral sex. We have fanny packs. We have some information, and we have silicone-based lube.
The World Health Organization defines comprehensive sex education as accurate, age-appropriate information about sexuality and sexual and reproductive health, starting with children who are 5 years old, the age when many children begin school. Nakia Outland is the founder and executive director of Prevention Meets Fashion. She told people attending the conference that it's never too early to start giving children the tools to understand their bodies and boundaries.
I've been getting a lot of parents lately that's like, I don't want you teaching my second grader about sex. Well, according to national sex education standards, a second grader should not be learning about sex, right? They should be learning about their body. They should be learning about consent and communication. So no, we're not teaching your second grader how to have sex, but we're giving them the mechanism and the tools to, as they grow, to recognize when things happen. They're able to say, mom, parent, whoever, like, this person looked at me funny or they touched me and it felt weird. But without any of these tools, they don't know, because we're taught to trust adults, right?
Nakia says the state should also update its rules to make sure that every student receives comprehensive sex ed.
PA needs a comprehensive sex education bill. Youth need comprehensive sex education. Disability needs to be included more in sex education. And LGBTQ plus youth need sex education. And remember, sex education is for all.
Reporting for Block by Block, I'm Sheila Lorette Emerson.
Spring is here, and so is triathlon season. Last Saturday, Block by Block reporter Rehana Sadiq completed her first triathlon in Virginia. It included swimming, biking, and running in back-to-back events. While training, Rehana found a strong sense of community through a local cycling group for Black women in Philly. She brings us this story.
For those of you out there on that bike, remember, you're doing two loops on this bike, one loop on the run.
For the past 5 months, I've been training for my first ever triathlon, and last week, I completed it. I was inspired to start training after joining She Is Focused and Fit, a cycling group led by Ajua Abrokwa. She leads beginner cycling groups in Fairmount Park and Center City, which was super fun and a great way to stay active in a new way. Ajua and I sat down and discussed how fitness, cycling, and staying active is needed for women and girls to improve our overall wellness, better our health, and create an inclusive community.
A big part of wellness for me was just being a part of teams. I enjoyed being a part of team activities, sports, or just other groups because I felt like it was a way for me to build community with other like-minded girls primarily that had similar interests. So I try to create that space for women and girls as well because I see value in the activities, but then also the community building. We had a couple meetups and then the pandemic hit, kind of stopped everything for a minute. And I started riding the bike and I started to be around other women who I felt like we're cycling together, but I may want to try to get to know you a little bit better. And I'm a team builder naturally. So it's like, okay, what can we do to help build community amongst this group of women who've now become, you know, cycling friends? So I tried to incorporate and infuse some of the reflective practice and the goal setting into the cycling space I had become a part of. And they seemed to really enjoy it. So I'm like, okay, how can I really bundle this all together and make it something really meaningful that I could be passionate about? And that's how She Is Focused and Fit came about.
Before joining She Is Focused and Fit, I was already into fitness, like running and going to the gym, but cycling was fairly new to me. After a few sessions on the bike, I found I really enjoyed it and wanted to see what new sports I can take up. I didn't know anyone who's ever completed a triathlon, including cycling, running, and swimming. Learning from Ajua helped me prepare for what to expect during the event.
Triathlon is what got me excited about the bike because I had a family member that was doing triathlons. And when I went to the races, I'm like, oh, this looks like a lot of fun. So when I started to ride the bike, I started to look at different races and opportunities. And I saw that there's like duathlons and then there were like triathlon relays. So again, me being the team builder and trying to make spaces as inclusive as possible, the group that I was a part of at the time, I'm like, you all, we should do a triathlon relay. I don't have to ride the bike because I run. So I can run, someone else can ride the bike, and like we have to find swimmers. Who in the group can swim? So some of the women said, you know, they could swim, they would swim. So we're like, all right, we should do a triathlon relay. And that way you get like your feet wet, no pun intended. You get your exposure to the space and then also decide like, is this something for me or is this something I really don't want to do?
In doing my research about triathlons, I never really saw many women or specifically Black women in this space. But after learning more and joining She Is Focused and Fit, it made me really excited to join and be a part of a fitness community.
It's a male-dominant sport, a white male-dominant sport, and women do well with it. Women enjoy it. Women are out here. And I think that the more that we engage, the more we encourage others to engage. It's a lot of fun. It's good for your physical health. And again, it connects people. I've been riding bike for 6 years consistently, and I've gone international with my bike. I've traveled all over, across the continental U.S. I've met so many amazing people that I probably would not have even encountered had I not decided to engage in cycling and immerse myself in the cycling community. I'm really big on exposure and experience. You know, like you can hear about people doing stuff and you can see them do it, but why not you? So like this year, my goal is really to create more opportunities to provide that exposure so folks can have an experience and hopefully join alongside me in some of these activities.
Training was a challenge, but it was very fun to try something new. And having a supportive community around me made it even better. I already signed up for my next triathlon in August, and I can't wait for more.
A Lebanese cartoonist is having her first art show in the U.S. right now in West Philadelphia with an exhibit highlighting aspects of the immigrant experience and much more. My co-host Amy Watara recently stopped by the gallery to find out more.
On the bustling 4500 block of Baltimore Avenue is Studio 34 Yoga Healing Arts. Go up the steep steps of the multifunctional yoga and art space in West Philadelphia and you will be greeted with the colorful artworks of Lebanese cartoonist Tracy Shahwan.
The exhibit is called Alien of Extraordinary Abilities. It's the name of this type of visa. I always found the title really funny. It comes from, you know, alien, which is very alienating word, obviously. And then you put extraordinary abilities. So I thought now it's funny in this context to make fun of this name of the visa in the political context right now.
Aliens of Extraordinary Abilities is Shahwan's first solo exhibit in the United States. The collection of art chronicles her artistic journey, allowing viewers to see the culmination of her artistry over the past 10 years. It includes music posters, comic panels, and even tapestry, all with a bright and bold, distinct style that is uniquely Shahwan's. Those 10 years were split right down the middle, the first half in Beirut, where she spent her formative years in artistic training, and the latter five being in Philadelphia, her new accidental home.
I wanted to get out of Lebanon because it was becoming hard, the economic situation, and there was a whole uprising happening. So I had applied for an art residency in France. But then when I came to visit my partner here, everything got canceled because of COVID. So I was like, I don't know what else to do with my life. So total accident.
Shahwan's art embodies a strong viewpoint that is a reflection of the world around her. Her experience of Philadelphia and the States are mirrored back in her work.
I think it's interesting to draw parallels between your past experiences and the new place where you are. And I think Philly, it's very different, obviously, but some aspects of it remind me of Beirut, of the Middle East, the way people drive. And a lot of America, you know, the inequalities, the sometimes bad quality of life. The main flyer, the poster of the exhibition, is a drawing I did the first year when I came here, and there was the George Floyd protest, and it really reminded me of the uprisings back home. So I wanted to draw a parallel. So I drew the flyer, which is like me in the middle and some kind of angel handing me my green card while like everyone is breaking stuff around.
A large portion of the exhibit is dedicated to music posters, a medium that really influenced the artist she is today.
I started with this collective called the Beirut Groove Collective. They do a lot of vinyl parties. They wanted to do something different, illustrating posters by hand, you know. I was lucky to find so much freedom. Now a lot of stuff that I do for money, they want something specific. These people, they don't care. So it's really good as an artist, you get to practice and have this freedom.
The exhibition walls are filled with subversive and bold graphic imagery. One that caught my eye was a music poster created for the band The Breeders, an illustration of topless pink women with contrasting broad tan lines raising rifles above their head. Another, a poster for the Beirut Groove Collective, depicting a devil-like figure raising records in both hands as the party rages on behind. No two artworks are the same. They are all imbibed in a comical, anarchal magic realism. Shahwan directed me to one that meant the most to her.
This piece is a poster for a very famous Algerian singer, Rachid Taha. It was commissioned for a concert of his, and I was a huge fan. So I did it, and I chose to draw him next to Kulthum, which is also a diva in the Arab world. But he passed away as soon as I finished the poster, which was very traumatizing. So after that, I turned it into a tribute.
The other side of the exhibit is lined with comic panels, another major piece of Shahwan's artistic journey from the past 10 years. Some are from zines and other projects where she reflects on her journey from the Middle East to the USA. But what she prominently displays are panels from her first graphic novel, Beirut, Bloody Beirut.
For me, it's a very important project. It was my first graphic novel, and it's kind of my love letter to my city where I spent all my 20s. So it's a really central project to me.
And scattered throughout are large tapestries in the unmistakable style of Shahwan.
So like this is a tapestry with like religious icons, but the saints are like worshipping shawarma. But at the same time, they have weapons and there's like modern buildings in the background. They were initially commissioned for an exhibition in Dubai about kind of a comical and critical take on Arab futurism.
The exhibit has been running since early April and will be closing June 7th.
It's been amazing because this space, 2234, is so welcoming and it brings together a lot of different people. It's been great to see like friends, people I know from yoga, from art scene, family just come together, and it's been really positive. I love it.
Until June 7th, it is free to view at Studio 34, Yoga Healing Arts, 4522 Baltimore Avenue. And you can find more of Tracy Shahwan and her art at her website, tracyshahwan.com. TracyShahwan.com. For Block by Block, this is Amy Watara. New pizza spots open in Philadelphia all the time, but few are focused on traditional Neapolitan-style pizza. These pizzas were invented in Naples, Italy, over 200 years ago and are smaller, lighter, round pies topped with tomato sauce and mozzarella. That's exactly what you'll find at a pizza bar near the corner of Broad and Fairmount. Block by Block reporter Alicia Miranda visited Sorolina and interviewed the chef behind the pizzeria to find out what makes it special.
Joe Ciccala is an Italian-American chef who's been making Neapolitan pizza for over a decade. He began his pizza-making career learning traditional Neapolitan recipes from chefs in Naples and completing the True Neapolitan Pizza Association, or AVPN, certification process, which teaches the official method of Neapolitan pizza. Later, he returned to Philly, building at a backyard pizza oven and hosting pop-ups both at home and at another restaurant he runs. His Neapolitan pies even garnered him third place at the International Pizza Expo back in 2021. Seeing his pizza success and Philadelphia's increasing love for pizza, he set out to open a pizzeria that would stand out from the rest.
Kind of wanted to try something different, and I was like, you know what, let's do a type of pizza that no one's doing in the city. Because now that Neapolitan is starting to have some footing around town, like, what's going to make us stand out? So I was like, okay, let's be the first pizzeria in Philly to do contemporary.
In 2024, Chef Jacala opened Sorellina to showcase his contemporary style of Neapolitan pizzas, which have a lighter, more airy dough and crunchier crust than most other pizzas you'll find in Philadelphia. One of Sorellina's most popular pizzas is the Stella, a star-shaped pizza with a ricotta cheese-stuffed crust topped with tomato sauce, spicy Calabrian sausage, and mozzarella. It's a pizza that has become synonymous with Chef Jacala and the signature dish at Sorellina. It also has historical and cultural meaning.
The Stella is a variation of a pizza that they serve on Fat Tuesday. It's called the Carnevale, where it's like your last chance to eat something very rich before you have to go into Lent. I think the original version has ricotta stuffed crust, but then it's like a bunch of meats on the topping. I thought the concept was so cool that it's a star-shaped pizza and the crust is stuffed.
All the pizzas at Sorellina take 3 days to make from start to finish. Day one begins with a pre-fermented yeast as the base of the dough. Then the dough rests and rises for 24 hours in the fridge, and the third day is when the dough is ready to be baked. Despite the long prep time, Sorellina pizzas can cook as quickly as 90 seconds when baked in an electric oven set at 887 degrees. According to Chef Jacala, this process helps develop more complex flavors and volume.
So I changed the process from direct method Neapolitan to contemporary Neapolitan. So you do get a lighter, fluffier, slightly crispier crust, which I think is great for the Stella because it's already fluffy from the ricotta and the star tips. Because of the high hydration, you get to keep a little bit of crunch to it, which I think, one, is delicious, but also very easily digestible. But I think it's something that the American market is looking for that they don't find in traditional Neapolitan.
One batch of dough makes 60 pizzas, and Sorellina sells up to 300 pizzas during service. Chef Jacala stays true to old-school techniques and sources ingredients imported from Italy, especially denomination of origin, or DOP products, like San Marzano tomatoes.
Or oregano from Sicily. One thing that did change is the cheese I'm using. I found an outstanding source for Neapolitan cheese. Latteria Sorrentina is the name of the company. They're made in the Sorrentina Mountains above the Amalfi Coast with local milk from the grass-fed cows. It's authenticity above everything. And then I use the slap method. I use the star tip, and I like to have the fancy shape exposed for each of the points. And then I just take them, pull it, and pinch. Then we go with ricotta. Then we go San Marzano tomato. Neapolitan sauce for pizza is uncooked, so it's just crushed tomato right out of the can and salt. No basil, no garlic, none of that. I build the pizzas upside down as far as toppings are concerned because I like that the cheese melts over top of it and prevents it from burning or charring. So we go with nduja first, a couple of basil leaves, and fior di latte mozzarella. All right, cool, star-shaped pizza, there we go.
Sorellina's menu is full of pizzas inspired by Chef Jacala's experiences in Italy and often features seasonal toppings, like ramps in the spring, zucchini blossoms in the summer, mushrooms in the winter. There's also a particular way they're made, presented, and eaten. Every pizza is served whole with a fork and knife, some pizzas have unusual shapes, and guests are encouraged to order one pizza per person.
So what we do is we serve it whole, so the guest has the option. We do get a lot of Italians here, so they want to eat it that way. So we give them a small pizza cutter on the side. The easiest way to cut it is between the star points. You don't want to crush the highest point, right? So if you just go in between.
Pizza culture in Philadelphia has changed so much since Chef Jacala started selling pizza here in the 2010s. But he remains one of the few chefs making this particular kind of pizza. He wants to see Philly get more credit for raising the standards of pizza making to new levels.
It's a serious pizza city now. We have Pizzata Pizzeria. He just won, Davide just won the gold in Roman style at the World Pizza Games in Vegas. Oh my God, that's like a huge international feat to do. And I don't think Philadelphia understands how big of a deal that is.
For Chef Jacala, pizza is about tradition, but also having fun and sharing it with others. So this summer, he plans to bring back outdoor pizza patio dining at Sorellina. To find out more, follow Sorellina on Instagram at SORELLINA_PHL. For Block by Block, I'm Alicia Miranda.
Block by Block is produced by Sheila Lorette Emerson, Crystal Herrera, Autumn McCann, Alicia Miranda, Casey Ruka, Nikki Schaefer, Rehana Sadiq, Maurice Waters, and us,
Amy Watara,
and David Hain Menendez. Maurice Waters is our board operator tonight.
Thanks for listening to Block by Block.
Block by Block is a production of WPPM, Philly Cam's community radio station dedicated to non-commercial, participatory media. If you'd like to help ensure that programs like Block by Block remain on the air in Philadelphia for years to come, you can make a gift to WPPM today, the first day of our 2025 fund drive.
We're hoping to raise $10,000 by Wednesday, June 4th. To make a donation in honor of Block by Block, visit wppm.phillycam.org/donate.